Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mod Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course, you are in tune to our regular broadcast of New Day every Saturday night here live and in living color. Bear with me for one moment, family. I need to do something real quick. Adrian, can you call in about 10 minutes instead of 11? The other time? All right. Yep. All right. Thank you. All right, family. Had to make a quick adjustment in terms of our reports for tonight. We do have joining us Sister Rahima, who is going to be joining us a little later on. We just got her on. She, of course, is going to give us a report from Tulsa. But coming up prior to her, or before her, is going to be Brother Adrian. Now, for those of you who have been following the news, I'm sure you've heard the report that just recently came in the past week or so in regards to the murder of a brother by the name of Ronald Green. Well, this happened on May 10th in 2019, but yet we're just starting to hear about it now. It was just another clear-cut situation of it's beyond brutality. It's bestiality in terms of what these people do, how they cover it up, and more is getting ready to be revealed about what has really happened. Well, at any rate, Brother Adrian Hickman is going to be joining us very shortly. He is, of course, in Baton Rouge, and he's going to tell us about, you know, how the people are responding there and just some general information. He's going to give us a more in-depth report later because this thing is just beginning to unravel. It's just beginning to really come to the surface, and we're very familiar with that, particularly here in Philadelphia, because as you know, in recent weeks, we have talked about the murder of the Move family in 1985, but of course, the recent situation is the discarding or the remains, the inhumane kinds of things that they did with the remains of the children. Two of the young Move women, girls, that is, that they were using, the institutions, University of Pennsylvania and Princeton University, were using their remains for some of their classes, anthropology and forensic classes. Well, needless to say, again, another clear example, and more of that is starting to come out. Sister PM Africa called me earlier today, and she didn't go into details in terms of exactly what is now being revealed, but I'm sure by next Saturday's program, we will have a full report ready for you on that. But there is some new stuff that is now being brought to the forefront in terms of, again, how this system, how this government has violated our people. And we know that this has happened for the past 400 years, needless to say, 400 plus years, but certainly we can now present this information in this day and age in such a way that is undisputable, undeniable, and we will not allow them to just dismiss it any longer. You can't. It's so obvious. But again, we're going to talk to Brother Adrian very shortly, and he's going to tell us about what's going on in Baton Rouge as it pertains to this latest brutal, heinous murder of a brother by the name of Ronald Green. Now, also, there's another situation there in Baton Rouge where apparently some cops busted into a house and did something with some teenagers. At any rate, there is a $35,000 payment that is now being administered to the family there. And, $35,000, that I don't know why they settled for that, but, hopefully brother will give us some kind of insight into that, which he really already did. And we're going to talk about that a little more as well. And what I'm referring to is the type of mentality that is unfortunately in our midst. Well, we'll talk more about that. And, of course, again, we're going to talk about the 100-year commemoration of the bombing and the massacre, the murders of our people in Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Again, we're going to talk with Sister Rahima and get the update on that. I was supposed to be in Tulsa this weekend myself. I may still get there tomorrow or Monday. I don't know, but so much has been going on with me this week. This past week with two deaths that, you know, one in particular was really just, wow, what can I say? Nana, Kwabi Nana Shanti was one of my elders who I certainly respected, who certainly, you know, gave me a lot of insight into various things. And so, you know, I knew that he was ill. So when I got the call, I wasn't, you know, as shocked or surprised. But the other person, Brother Sabor Muhammad, I was very, very surprised by that one. You know, did not see that coming at all. At any rate, our blessings go to the families once again, as we indicated last week. And certainly they will both be missed very, very much, but we will certainly continue the work and the mission that they certainly, you know, put before us. Also, moving along, Recharge Genocide 21. I want to thank everyone for participating in last week's Reparatory Justice. It was wonderful. Brother Brian Muhammad, Sister Tawanda, and others joined us for that. It was an excellent, excellent kind of weekend. Again, of great information. Brother Jamoke, again, and others. And so we will be doing our June Reparatory Justice session this coming weekend. We want to remind everyone that Sunday, June the 6th, we're calling it St. Cali House Day. That's right, St. Cali House Day. So that's why we're doing the Reparatory Justice this month coming up. It's going to be early in the month, and that is because Mother Cali House made transition on June the 6th. Okay, and so we felt it would be appropriate to hold the session around that time, and that is what we are going to do, okay? So, again, this coming month, Reparatory Justice Virtual Conference will take place from June the 4th, starting on Friday, to June the 6th, which will end on Sunday. And this week's coming session is going to start some of the actual organizing and getting ready for our first mass assembly, which will be at the United Nations on September the 4th in New York. Again, September 4th is the date for us to do our first mass assembly at the United Nations. And this will also be our Black Declaration of Self-Determination. And so we will officiate certain processes this September as it pertains to our Recharge Genocide 21 project. Again, we are in the process of beginning to get the signatures for the letter of intent. We plan to take our first 1,000,000 signatures to the United Nations in December. Now, just to give you some clarity, the letter of intent is not the petition. The petition will be drafted within the next year or so when we do a summit, et cetera, with our committees. That will be the petition. That will not be presented until next year. But this year, the letter of intent, that will be taken to the United Nations in December, somewhere between December 10th and December the 17th. Remember, this is the 70th year commemoration of the great Paul Robeson taking the petition to the United Nations on December 17th in 1951. And, of course, William Patterson took it to Paris, France. So again, between December 10th, we haven't selected a date yet. We have to see what's going on at the United Nations during that week. And so we'll know the best time to take it very soon when we examine further what they will have going on that week. But at any rate, we know it will be between December 10th and December 17th. December 10th is International Human Rights Day. Okay, and so somewhere in that week, we plan to take our first 1,000,000 signatures and the letter of intent. For those of you who would like to sign on to the letter of intent, we have a new format for you until the website has to be restructured due to some kind of what I believe was an internal sabotage. But again, we'll go into that at another time, but we do have a Google Doc and another form that people can submit as a part of the letter of intent. You can also get copies because we're hoping that people will at least getting 10 signatures at this time. At any rate, again, mark the calendar. September 4th, we plan to be at the United Nations. That way, people will literally be able to come, sign on for the letter of intent, pick up copies to take with them, et cetera, et cetera. That will be an initial grassroots kind of kickoff. And so, again, September 4th at the United Nations will be our first mass assembly. Our second mass assembly will happen in Washington, D.C., but we are not going to give you a lot of information on that just yet. We want to deal with first things first. Okay, so again, hopefully we'll be able to have that live stream for those who are not able to attend, but definitely we know that, hey, New York City, you know you're going to get a relatively large number of people. Now that the COVID thing seems to be subsiding and the restrictions are now becoming minimized, we do expect a large crowd, even though we will still enforce the kinds of safety things that we need to have in place, okay? Again, this weekend, for those who are interested in volunteering, endorsing, becoming coordinators, what have you, this weekend we will begin that process. So if you haven't gotten the link or the kinds of ways you can join us for Friday night, starting on Friday night, we can email that to you, and I will give out some of the numbers where you can call. I'll give some of that out shortly. Okay, I think I see Brother Adrian in queue. Brother Adrian, if you are, please press 1, and we're going to get our first report coming from Brother Adrian in Baton Rouge. We're going to talk again just briefly about what's going on there, the people, how are people responding? We hear that there have been several rallies this past week in regards to, you know, getting more information, getting the kinds of things, transparency that needs to happen. There still seems to be some questions that must be raised, even though the video or some parts of the video has been seen, but apparently there are some parts of the video that has been blocked out. And so, you know, apparently, of course, the family, the community must make certain that all aspects of that crime is, in fact, disclosed, and the various people who are involved in it. They need to be fired, dismissed, and ready for trial, minimally. But at any rate, there's a lot that is being developed still, and so we're just going to tonight kind of just, you know, get some general information, and then in the very near future, Brother Adrian will be bringing to us more in-depth information because this thing is still developing or you know, still being disclosed. And apparently, there's been a lot going on in that area that hasn't really come to the forefront. Well, that's the one thing that I say about this corona thing. It has really, I think, helped people to get a better capability to see some things that we know was happening, but now it's like crystal clear. So at any rate, let's go to our live line and bring in one of our brothers in support of the Million Women March Universal Movement, and, of course, one of our coordinators for the Recharge Genocide 21 Project, Brother Adrian Hickman, is in the house calling in from Baton Rouge. Hey, Brother Adrian.
How you doing, MPC? Hotel to you and all your listeners. There's a lot more to this thing than meets the eye about the death of Ronald Green. I saw his mom, Mona Hardin, and his civil rights attorney, Lee Merritt, and they spoke about several things where Governor John Bel Edwards, who's the governor of the state of Louisiana, who got in because of the black vote when he beat Edith Burgoyne, has not received them well, even though he has, I'm speaking to John Bel Edwards, received the black vote. So we have to hold elected officials from the state level on down accountable. And the police officer who supposedly committed suicide, there's no, according to my research team, Chris Hollingsworth, who supposedly committed suicide, there's no record, according to my research team, of his funeral, which means he may not be dead. He may just change his identity, which means he could still be walking the streets and possibly still be on the police force. So we have to have other things that we have to look at as well. And all of those officers who've had several cases that are pending right now, even though some of those officers involved with the death of Robert Green in 2019, 2 years ago, are retired, but they still have some pending cases right now going on as well. So it's a whole lot of layers to that onion that need to be appealed. So therefore, we as a black community, and black men in particular, what we need to do is organize ourselves, put aside our petty differences, and organize ourselves into a military force to try to do independent investigations, because there's DNA evidence, blood samples, court documents that are pending right now that have proven that some of these officers that are involved in the death of Robert Green have done other things in the past. Some of them have raped women. Some of them have done all kind of illegal stops. So those are things that I'm working on to try to get other individuals that have found this research to put this out, and that hasn't made the national news yet. If this thing with Robert Green had been under the radar from the governor's mansion on down for several years, for the past 2 years, then that should let us be aware, make us aware that there's a whole lot of things that are pending and need to be unpeeled. And I'm going to be finding out through court documents some of the things you can Google. The only reason that this has come out is because the Associated Press have fought for it. That's the only reason this has came out 2 years later. That's why we need to do independent forensics and investigations, which I'm working with right now as we speak.
Wow. Wow. This is really, now for point of clarity, the officer that you said they said committed suicide, he was not linked to this particular murder of Ronald Green. Is that correct?
No, he was linked. He was one of the officers involved, according to what. He was one of the officers involved.
Got you. Got you. Okay.
As a matter of fact, he might have been. So far, he might have been the officer that cut off the webcam.
Okay. Got you. Okay. Wow. I wasn't, see, again, thank you for that, because I wasn't, supposedly was dead.
Yeah. But there's no record of his funeral. So that's why, because my research team have not found any record of it sooner. If a state trooper usually dies, and this is in 2019, before COVID, so if a state trooper died, it would have been a big funeral, a big whoop-de-do about an officer dying in the line of duty. But there is no record at any church, and the link from the church that he was supposedly a member of
didn't have any record of a funeral. So other churches in that area, my research team have done background checks of other churches in that area and there's no record so far that we have found, that my research team has found, of a funeral that he's had, which means it's a possibility that he still might be alive and just change his identity.
Right.
And keep
right.
in mind, when people believe, when people say, well, why would they do that? It's very obvious to me. If you will murder somebody and then lie and cover it up for 2 years, and the only reason it came out is because an independent source put it out, then changing your identity, to me, is not a false way.
Wow. Okay. So we will definitely keep our ears and eyes open as this whole thing unfolds. And it's just so, I mean, for it to be 2 years for this to now be coming out, which just kind of indicates, you know, surely there are other situations, other cases, other murders, other crimes against our people that we probably might not ever hear anything about, you know. So this just points that out. And we need to, as you said, Brother Adrian, we need to now really, really get organized because like Sister Keisha and others have certainly been, you know, saying over the past couple of years that these people are really up in their whole thing of what they've been doing and what they plan to do, which is, you know, very obvious now. So we better get together.
Since the conviction of Derek Chauvin, which a lot of people celebrated, and it's like, hey, we're going to show you that we don't care about that. Now, here's another thing that happened at that time. Around that time, the reason probably that the Robert Greene case got swept up under the rug is because two black officers stopped a white assailant for a traffic stop on a dark road near Ditch in Louisiana. The assailant who was stopped for a traffic violation, whatever it was, put his truck in reverse and tried to run over the officer. The officers opened fire because at that point, the truck became a lethal weapon because he tried to run the officers over. Those two black officers, in less than 24 hours, were fired and put in jail. Their families had to put up land to try to bond them out. And that happened around the same time that the situation with Robert Greene happened, which was probably why the Robert Greene situation was swept up under the rug. So notice the difference in this system, the difference between the reaction and the response. Two black officers opened fire. Allegedly, they said a baby was murdered. But that's not on the officers because it was a dark road and the assailant who was stopped put the truck in reverse. So when the officers opened fire, the officers were charged with murder of a child because they didn't see a child was in the back seat. So if they were fired and put in jail in less than 24 hours, and this situation with Robert Greene was thrown up under the rug from the governor's office on down for 2 years. That shows the difference between how they react when we die and how they react when some of theirs die, even if it's quote unquote justifiable homicide.
Wow. All right. Well, it seems like Baton Rouge is going to be another one of the hot spots because just want to go back for a moment, or not go back. I just want to take a look at another situation that came out of Baton Rouge recently. Apparently, on New Year's Day of 2020, some cops stopped the car there in Baton Rouge, and in doing so, illegally kind of strip searched two young black males One was as young as 16. I think the other one might have been like 18. You know, stopped their car and strip searched them and then went into their house without a warrant. Now, recently, according to this article and the report from CBS News, a settlement was recently come to of $35,000. But yet, of course, the officers were not reprimanded or fired or put on leave or nothing. They're just the payment of $35,000. And again, this is Baton Rouge. What's going on with that, my brother?
Well, one thing is Baton Rouge needs to be a sleeping giant because after the situation with the Alton Sterling situation and the flood,
right.
A lot of people had lost track because the situation that happened in 2020 was also a recurrence because people were gearing up for Alton Sterling as well as other situations that have happened when the young white male from LSU murdered the black female, his girlfriend at the time, and went to jail for that murder. So that situation happened as well. So we had a lot of those situations and a lot of those what is called unsolved murders that went on at the same time. And I think in this system, people was like, well, we'll pick and choose one over the other. And this is why I'm working hard to try to get black men in particular, but black people in general, to understand that we have to do independent investigations for ourselves, with our podcast, with our cell phones, with our independent media, even though there's very few, but we still need to support them. And this is some of the things that we have to start doing because several things have been happening and have been swept up under the rug. And some of the individuals who were on the case at that time and on those times, some of them have moved out of Baton Rouge and other people hadn't picked up the torch.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brother Adrian. I want you to stay there. I think we have a caller that has a question or a comment. And also, family, if you have one, please press one now. We certainly would like to hear your thoughts about what's going on with this murder of Ronald Green. Also, of course, what I just mentioned, which, of course, at least one young brother, I think the other one was maybe 18, but the youngest one was 16, where these cops strip searched them, okay, and went into their house without a warrant. So we'd like to know what your thoughts are about those two things. So press one now if you have a comment or a thought. And let's see, we're going to go to caller at 1693. 1693, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment, The New Day.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing today?
All right, and yourself?
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. You know, I've listened to other podcasts. I listened to one, it's called the Stereo Podcast, and, you know, you just can bounce around and listen to different conversations going on all at one time. It's kind of interesting to a degree. I don't know if you can, you know, tell by me talking that, you know, I'm a white guy, and so, you know, there's all kinds of different kinds of talks going on, and I'm listening to this one for the first time. And I just hear the same kind of thing going on all over, and it's kind of new to me. I mean, I kind of know that this has kind of been going on and how people are thinking. And I just think in the whole scheme of things, we need to, like, fix this on a larger scale. And I believe the larger scale is, in my theory, it truly. And from what I've heard from black communities on Stereo podcasts, and a lot of them talk about separation, is what they felt is the only solution. You know, so I don't know what the full sentiment of the black community is, if that's what their thinking is, because when I was on there, I was approached and I was called the devil. You know, I still heard many things talked about in terms of slavery and how they feel about, you know, the United States and, the white community, and it was pretty eye-opening and shocking, to tell you the truth. I mean, I was like floored with the things that I heard and the things that were said to me. And
What is your name?
You can call me Thomas. That is my first name. Yeah, I used to call myself John or Thomas because I like to be followed by the founding fathers, either John Adams or Thomas Jefferson. But
I see.
I'm a firm believer that those guys were at it together. And where we are today, unfortunately, has been a tyranny and destruction of what they created, and that's why we're in a bad situation today.
So with what you just said, John or Thomas, what are your thoughts? I mean, you said you're surprised.
I didn't say surprised.
Oh, okay.
I said I was floored.
Oh, okay. You were
floored by what I heard.
I was born in Detroit. Why were you floored?
Because of the intensity of it all, the resentment, the feeling of them of the community of the black community going, we need to heal. I mean, I was hearing about we need to heal still, and there's a lot of mental illness within the black community, they were saying, and that was what they were going to try to bring up to their representatives, that they should have a fund for the black community to be able to, you know, deal with the mental aspect of the past.
Uh-huh. So
okay.
Is this similar
to what you think is the case?
Well, before I answer that, John, what are your thoughts about that? Since you have heard these things.
Well, I don't live in a black community.
I'm sure you don't live in a black community, John. My question wasn't that. My question is,
based on what I've heard on the podcast.
Okay, but what I've heard, I'm just
trying to figure out if this
John, hold it. John, stop for a moment, please. I got that part. My question again to you is, what are your thoughts about what you've heard?
I have no idea. I don't know if this was just a small group. I'm not asking you whether it was small or large.
What I'm asking you
is...
That's
what I'm asking you.
Okay, we're not going to both talk at the same time, so I'll wait and let you finish.
Yeah, no, I'm asking you how the sentiment was on your end, if you feel the same way, or do you feel like that the full community, the black community is that way, or what I heard on the podcast stereo was just a very small, you know, fraction of a percentage of, and they're just speaking for themselves.
Okay, and so again, before I respond to your question, my question is, based on what you heard, what is your opinion? Not whether or not it was a large group or a small group, just based on what you heard. I just hear little pieces. So I can't really have an opinion
until I hear more of exactly what is going on and what scale.
Okay, so this is what I'm going to do, because I like to listen as opposed to giving my opinions about certain things, particularly when that's not the focus for tonight or the focus for that program. But what I'm going to do is invite one of our sort of kind of like specialists or people who really that is their genre, that is their area where they do kind of answer these kinds of questions. So I'm going to ask Sister Keisha if she's in queue or if she can join us. I'm going to give her a few moments to call in, and I'm sure she will be more than happy to address your questions, John. Okay, so let's give a few moments for that. And in the meantime,
the question wasn't a question. I'm trying to figure out if that is the case. And then for what I'm saying is, from what I've heard, I feel like what then that group that I was listening to on Stereo Podcast was talking about, separation is needed for the black community to gather together and to get to the level of where they feel they can be, because they feel as if being in the community of the United States doesn't allow them to be where they would like to be. You know what I mean?
So John, let me just ask you a question. Since you don't have an opinion about what it is you heard, what is your opinion about systemic racism, extreme racism?
You know, I don't know, because I don't see it anywhere. So, I don't know what that, you know, what exactly that is.
So let's go with the example of what I'm sure you just heard what we were just talking about with the murder of Ronald Green.
I don't know
that,
murder.
Oh,
no, I'm
okay.
Not. So yeah, it was due
okay,
to
but
me.
But I'm sure you have heard the recent one of George Floyd or Breonna Taylor.
Okay. She was the one where her boyfriend, she was asleep, there was somebody that did enter into the apartment or open the door. And the boyfriend had a revolver, and I don't know if it was shot off. See, the thing is, you got to know the full facts. So I do not know the full facts. So I kind of heard that he did fire a shot, and then
Okay.
So, I mean, if you're a police officer and somebody shoots at you, well, you're going to shoot back. most people are going to shoot back.
Or if you enter someone's abode and you don't indicate you are a police officer
right.
or whatever, you
also.
Just go and
There's no doubt about it. I agree with you.
So if this kind of thing happens in the black community on a regular basis, what would you think that would be if you don't see that kind of thing happening in white communities very regularly?
I put myself in a situation of where, after hearing all this that I've heard as of late, I kind of said, okay, if I was a white person myself and I was in a black country and my ancestors 5 generations ago were slaves and I am now not, but I have an opportunity to speak up, I would probably say, you know what? I want to get the fuck out of here. I believe that, my people will be able to create a better society and a better country and our own constitution on our own. And if you want to help do that since what the past occurred, I think that would be the best for all parties. And I would want to get the hell out of there. I would not live in a black country if my ancestors were slaves within that country. So that's my opinion, and that's how I think my mindset came. I would want to, because I know I could create a great country. I know I would create a great country. I would write a great constitution for us, and it would be a great place.
Right. I see. So, Brother Adrian, I'm going to let you respond to this in a minute, but before
you do. You don't feel the same way? You don't think that the black community would be better off with writing their own constitution, having their own country for themselves, and create businesses that flourish for themselves?
So again, I'm going to have Brother Adrian to respond to that question. I'm going to ask the questions, okay? I would prefer to do that.
All right.
And so my question is, so given the fact of what you just said, John, given the fact that at least 200 years of free labor occurred in this country in helping to build it, what do you think should happen in
200
terms
years
of
free labor?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. No, I don't think it was 200 years of free labor. You're wrong on those
numbers.
You don't?
Yeah, it was more.
No.
It really was more, but I'm going to say 200.
How can that be? The United States was created in 1776.
So you're saying the
slaves were freed in 1865. That's 80 years.
So you're saying the formal formation of the United States. So you're saying that the people who were not involved in that formal, or who were involved in that formal signing and all of that, you're saying that them and none of their descendants were involved with the initial kidnapping of African people?
Well, no, actually, slavery started in Africa. It was their culture.
Oh,
and
really?
Slavery, if you want to find out more about that, which is basically, it was a slave business within Africa, and they made money within their own country, black-owned black slaves, and then they decided to spread
and
it out to the rest of the world.
You think that was the dominating culture?
It was part of their culture, slavery, yes.
Do you think that was – it was a – well, slavery was in every culture, but in terms of the dominating –
right, that's true. You're right.
It was. Word. Can you prove that, John?
Yeah.
No, you can't.
Oh yeah, there's definitely information
no, you can't.
To prove that.
I'm sure that there's information that will disprove that, but that's not the issue that we're going to talk about tonight. We don't want to go down the road of you know, propagating myths or things that people might have read at some point, but not overwhelmingly, because the data will certainly show more qualitatively that is not true. But at any rate,
I said, if my ancestors were enslaved for, say, 80 years, 150 years, 300 years, and then I was fifth generation and I was free, I would still want to get the F out of that African into black controlled nation.
Oh, I'm sure.
And
but
create my own
this,
wonderful
John.
Nation.
Let me ask this. If you are hit by a car, you're walking down the street minding your own business, if that's possible, and then you are hit by a car. So you're telling me that you don't feel that you deserve to be compensated for the injury that has been inflicted upon you.
Uh-oh, I see what you're saying. No, that's exactly what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is I believe the compensation should exist in the form of a new country, your own the infrastructure of a beautiful country. You write the Constitution, you write the laws, you own
the
businesses, and the infrastructure of, say, in the terms of what, $15, $20 trillion would build a new country infrastructure for this new country of yours.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. I've heard this position before, and I'm glad you clarified that. But Brother Adrian, I'm going to turn it over to you while I get ready for the guest that we were preparing.
All right. How you doing, John?
I'm all right.
Okay. My name's Brother Adrian. I'm out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. What you're mentioning is also included in that, there were because you say build our own country, not only our own country, but our own school systems that we have with HBCU. When you say, what about getting out of the country? We had our own cities where we had businesses, where we invented conveniences that people in America are still using today, like the red light, like the stop sign, like the gas.
Listen, all I'm trying to do is come up with a solution.
Right.
You understand solutions? I'm trying to come up with a solution you don't have to waste talking about this.
Well,
I'm
telling you a solution. A solution
the white
is
cops
help
and the white
us
murders
expand.
And the murders of this.
Okay.
And you just go on and move forward
help
with
black people expand,
a beautiful new country.
The things that we're doing now. Some of the things that we're doing now with establishing
our
own.
You want to keep fighting and doing that, that's fine. That's on you. Don't say I never gave a solution.
No, I'm giving you a solution. Help us expand
Brother
what
Adrian,
we're doing.
Hold that point for one moment. I think Brother Mike.
No, because I believe in separation. See, I believe that it doesn't work.
Okay.
I don't believe races
John,
should be together.
Hold that point for one moment because one of our historians has come into the queue, and I think he would like to maybe respond to or be a part of this dialogue. Hold on one moment, please. Okay. Mike Graves is in the house, one of our bona fide historians. Greetings to you, Brother Mike.
Greetings, Sister Empress. Greetings, Sister Empress. How are you tonight?
I am just wonderful.
Yeah, I must commend you on your skills, because it's actually coming out what he actually called in for. He is a separatist. He mm-hmm. believes in white supremacy. Consequently, he's putting the onus on us for what they have done. Now, he has dismissed literally 500 years of oppression of black people and act as if that system of slavery that was established in the West Bank of Africa in the 1400s. He's acting as if that was not Europeans. Those are the very same people that established America. This slave trade has been going on for well over 500 years, and he dismissed even the American aspect, 1619, and he dismissed it all the way to what, the writing of the Constitution, as he admitted his founding fathers, who he's named after, in the 1780s. So he's already taken off literally almost 200 years of history. So I don't even know, I don't know if his problem is really his white supremacy ideology, or is it just his math skills have eroded from a basic level where he can't count anymore, but he's pretending that he doesn't have an opinion. But before I came on, he admitted to you that he's a separatist, as if we have the power to here to separate in America from white people, as if they don't have institutions strong enough to prevent any type of movement or motion that we can bring into existence. As you pointed out, we've had independent systems where we were in control of that, and they interrupted those. And not only with mob rule, not only with governmental administrations on a state level, but federal governments have come in, as what you see in Tulsa, 50 years after the terror that they created and that massacre. The federal government came in with a highway to further put a dent into any type of economic recovery. So from what it transpired. So,
okay, well, if all this is true, let's say it is.
It's not if it's true. It is true. No.
Okay, it's true. It's true. Okay, it's true.
Hold on. Let's establish truth first. Hold on. Hold on now. I heard you speak. Let me speak.
Okay,
it's not. Let's establish truth. White folks have developed an inability to live with anyone other than their own white selves, because they will turn that evil they do on each other, even if we would not have existed. So let's be clear on that first. First of all, had we never left Africa, there would be no white people on the planet. Y'all are the last people on the planet. Y'all are between 40 and 50,000 years old. There's no such thing as a white person older than 50,000 years, unless you want to connect yourself with Neanderthals, which are not human beings, because they didn't have foreheads. So if you don't want to connect yourself with them, then the black man and the black woman is your daddy. And then you gotta face the facts on that. So I just want to disrupt your sleep patterns tonight by telling you that the black man and the black woman is your daddy. Now, I hope if your white supremacist self, you can still go to sleep knowing that over 50,000 years ago, the black man and woman brought you into existence by leaving the continent, getting caught in the ice shield, and not fighting the ice and going back in Africa, but going on over the Barren Straits and populating this Western Hemisphere, consequently over that ice period changes. Mutations had occurred, and consequently you were on Earth, and ever since you've been unleashed, you've caused terror, pain, and exploitation and militarism everywhere you've gone. That's a brief sketch of history. Now, whatever you want to say about the system in America, I'm more than willing to listen to, but I just wanted to establish to you in a short period of time that you were not only the last on the planet, you were the worst killer on the planet. But go right ahead with whatever you have to say.
I was the worst killer on the planet.
You are the worst killer. You're more dangerous than a snake, a tiger, or a lion, or anything else.
I'm the nicest guy on the planet.
Oh, no, you're not, but you can pretend to be. Go right ahead.
That's
anyway,
why Robert Greene.
Okay, so all that truth that you just said, doesn't that make it even better to want to have your own country and get away from it?
How are we in a position to establish a country here? You've taken out the best out of Africa, and you put Africa in a position where it can hardly fend for itself and feed itself without white interruptions. Consequently, we don't have a foundation that can secure our safety if we were to establish the Black Belt South or whatever you want to call it, those five states that many of our people had requested for years. It would take a minimum of three generations, 60 to 80 years or more, to establish that, and America has shown that it will not give up one inch of land. Henceforth, it would not give up five states, and America fought a war against other white people who would not try to separate themselves from this country. It's called the Civil War. And that happened, and they killed over 630,000 white people that looked just like them to make America one country. So why would we even try to entertain an idea that somehow America would allow black people to separate when it didn't even let white people separate? I mean, you're talking about gangsters. Just study the Civil War and you'll understand why we can't separate even if we wanted to this day. Do you think that we enjoy seeing the George Floyds of the world or what happened in Tulsa or the same thing that happened in Wilmington, North Carolina, or Rosewood, or Chicago, or Washington, D.C., or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, all these massacres that has occurred all these years at the hands of white mobs, and not always government, sometimes just plain old white mobs like the nice white guy that you are, when those things happen. And what did they use for an excuse? 9 out of 10 times is always a white woman that didn't even exist. She was somehow raped or brutalized. The one they used in Tulsa, a black man who shined shoes for a living right outside of that establishment, just bumped into her when the elevator buckled. She caused the elevator to buckle with her own incompetence as the elevator, control person.
Oh, here we go, man. So the black man is a beautiful angel, and it never did anything corrupt to anybody in the world or anywhere.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. But let's establish the truth. This is just your way. You can't take the truth that a white mob saw an independent society in Black Wall Street, Greenwood, so-called Black Wall Street. Was living well and had banks, had credit systems, had businesses all throughout that area, had pianos staring you in the face, and all white folks, dirt farmers all over, looking at black folks with nice china, sending their children to Howard and other schools like that, couldn't just countenance that, could not take that. Consequently, you turned on that community just on a rumor that a black man, what was his name, Roland, bumped into her on an elevator when the elevator buckled. And that went from that to a rape. By that afternoon, the fishtail went from a sexual attack, harassment, physical attack, to rape. By that night, and white folks went crazy and demanded his head. And the sheriff, knowing full well that there was nothing happened other than he bumped into her, the sheriff was trying to help by locking up the black man for his own safety. But when black people interceded at hearing that they were going to come in there, take him out of the jail and hang him, black people came to his aid. Consequently, when that happened and a white guy came over there to the black people and a shot was fired and he was shot, that started off the Tulsa race riot where thousands of blacks were killed. They say 300, but you can't do 35 miles and all these businesses, hundreds of businesses, hundreds of houses that went for 12 square blocks in all directions. You can't make all those black people disappear and say later, oh, it was just 300. It was in the thousands. And anybody that got out of that survived were just lucky.
Yeah.
And that's why, man,
I don't know what to say, man. Like I said, you know, if this shit's going to fucking continue, we got to come up with a solution. And it's not going to change. I don't see if it hasn't changed yet. Yeah, Lincoln said it wouldn't work. He wanted to send the blacks either back to Africa or have a place in Central America.
Lincoln said it won't work. He said, that's why I choose the best for myself. Lincoln was a white man. He was a supremacist like other ones. He just personally did not like slavery. On a personal level,
right.
He had no slaves. But his friends, his boyfriend, Joshua Speed, who was his best friend, had slaves, came from a rich family and had slaves. Lincoln said he would enslave every black man in America to keep America one country. He said he would free every black person in America to keep it one country. His priority was merely to save the Union.
Yeah,
he was no better or no worse than any other white guy.
There you go.
All right.
I agree.
We're going to move forward, John. We certainly appreciate your insight. It has been very enlightening, needless to say. And always.
Like I said, if I was, I would come together with about a million or two people and say, you know, reparation in the form of our own country and infrastructure would be nice. But, you know, they're just not going
to happen. No, John.
Go to work.
John, why don't you be honest? You want us to leave. You want to live in Whitelandia alone with other white people. And you just saying, why don't y'all just leave as if you could have established this thing without us? You couldn't have. You could not have become the number one superpower on the planet without having black
slave labor. No, we would have been better off, brother. No, you guys held us down. You guys were negative on us, man. We would have been far further along.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And you don't believe that one. Even you don't believe that one. That's just a sophomoric response to what I'm saying.
You've only been a thorn in our side, dude. You've only been a thorn in our side.
All right.
Is that right?
John, again, we appreciate.
Right. Charles Drew and Blood Plasma and the street lights and all those other things, y'all would have been fine. Y'all wouldn't be crashing cars into each other.
Sure, exactly, man. You guys are inventors. Okay.
And we're not even going to talk about how they got rich off of cotton. We won't even go into how you got rich off of cotton. And
sugar, tobacco, rice.
I got rich off of cotton. That money's long gone. Most money's not even generational.
Let me just say one last thing, Sister Empress. Tell that to the white mayor of Tulsa right now, whose family has been here since 1655. Tell that to him and his rich family that had in 1665, his family had close to 1,000, had about 965 slaves documented at that time. You telling me that slavery, that money is not generational? Well, why is his family all millionaires now?
All right. With that said, I think we can move forward. We have Sister Rahima ready to come in from Tulsa,
I think you love it. I think you love just complaining. That's just part of your culture. So that's all I can see. You don't think you can officially establish.
Oh, so the truth is a complaint now.
You're afraid to establish your own country and fail. That's what it is.
We're going to move forward.
You're the geniuses. You guys will be able to come up with all new inventions, and you guys can move forward and surpass everybody else.
The truth really hurts, don't it? The truth really hurts, don't it?
Well, John, we appreciate your
comments. John, Jesus Christ was black. How you like that one, John? Jesus Christ was black. But go right ahead. Now I'm really mad to sleep up.
I don't believe in religion, dude. I'm an atheist.
I know you don't.
Okay.
I know most white people are.
We put in enough time with John or Thomas, whichever. We need to move forward. But again, we appreciate your thoughts. It helped us to better understand the system of white supremacy, which is what we need to do. So again,
okay.
Thank you.
Well, you just
we're
scared people. You just scared people.
Okay. Oh, don't you like technology where you can just shut people the hell up? Anyway, moving right along. Thank you, Brother Mike. As usual.
No, I just had to. I just said, man, I think I got to say something to him. Because he tried to act like, you know, he just trying to act like this ain't a white problem. This is a black problem. I said, okay, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, and that he didn't have an opinion. That was, I mean,
he didn't have an opinion.
Right. But anyway. All right. Brother Adrian, again, we thank you for your report and look forward to an update very soon as things begin to unfold even more so in Baton Rouge. Thank you, Brother Adrian.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, we're going to bring in Sister Rahima now to get our update. I'm sure she was loving that. She's right there in Tulsa. And of course, you know, fighting the good fight for our people in the community there on the real, by the way. So let's bring Sister Rahima in and get the report on what's going on in Tulsa like right now, the past few days and what's coming up in the next few days. Hey, Sister Rahima.
Peace and blessings.
Greetings. Wasn't that interesting? Wasn't that fun? Did you hear that?
That was quite interesting. Quite interesting.
You got some noise going on in your background. I need you to, kind of, if you can, like, mute that out or something. Okay, that's better. Thank you.
I don't have any.
Oh, okay. Well, let me check
somebody
with somebody. Okay, got you. Let me do this then to make sure. Okay, but yeah, that was really interesting. I mean, every now and then we get those calls, and when we do, it gets handled. So we're very thankful to be able to give those kind of examples. But go ahead, my sister. Again, thank you for taking the time to join us. And you're right there in the thick of what's going on, you know, in Tulsa. So give us some insight.
Well, I don't really have much to report. I kind of try to look at things. I try to look at details, but I also try to look at the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I could say is that there was a lot of confusion about you know what was to transpire. Brother John Legend was supposed to have formed yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
No, was it yesterday, LaShawna? Yesterday, on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday we found out that it had been canceled. Now, actually, Thursday afternoon, it started raining very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so they used it as an excuse, I guess, to say that he would not be performing due to the weather. But it has come out that there was a discrepancy about how much he was supposed to get paid.
Oh,
and
wow.
And in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that's a big issue here. We had some people to come from California, and they were trying to get volunteers, and it was extremely hard. It's, okay, how much are you going to pay me? I'm a volunteer, but how much are you going to pay me? And so we were kind of fussing about it. You know, these people, why can't they understand that their volunteering is an investment? And so there was one sister sitting there who does a lot of volunteering. And she said, well, let me explain it to you this way. Okay, thank you. She said, let me explain it to you this way. People in North Tulsa were always volunteers. And they found out that you could volunteer in North Tulsa, but if you volunteer in other parts of the country, of the city, you would get paid. For example, she teaches tennis for free, but when she goes to another part of Tulsa, she gets paid. And she said what they do, they don't want to, they don't think black folks should get paid or should get paid the same thing that other people get paid. So they just don't pay them. And she knew a man who had been teaching Taekwondo for 10 years and never got paid. But he would spend his money on the children, of course, because they were poor children and this and that. So, and so now he's just, I can't remember now, might have been 20 years, he's just burnt out, you know. And so I said, well, look, we need to honor these people. So we tried to do it, but it was just like kind of like too late because it's just, we just discovered this like 3 weeks ago, you know, because we didn't know we didn't know anything about this.
And I'm really glad you mentioned that because we had gotten reports earlier in the week, like Monday, that it was going to be canceled. Okay. But the reason that we were told that it was, we heard this around Monday that it was going to be canceled. John Lennon and Stacey Abrams or whomever. And so, but we were told that the reason why it was being canceled or that they had taken the position to pull out, that was the terminology that was given to us. We were told that the reason why they were doing that was because the negotiations for the survivors that wasn't happening the way they felt it should happen, and therefore they were going to pull out. So this is a totally different story that we're hearing now, a different reason. Again, what we initially heard was that they were in support of the position of making certain that the survivors was able to, you know, to get what they were asking for, what they deserve, really. And since,
you're talking about the guests? You're talking about the guests? You're talking about John Legend and
I'll say it again. We were told that John Legend and Stacey Abrams were pulling out because they were in support of the survivors. And since that wasn't happening in the manner that it should have, they were pulling out as a form of support.
Go ahead. And that may have been a part of it. But the person who works second to me, my assistant director, General Parker, who actually lives in Peoria, Illinois, sent a letter to California to a friend of his who is a friend of John Legend's. And wanted to remind him that where you are, he was supposed to be performing at a baseball field. And he wanted his friend to remind John Legend that he would be performing on the remains of the soldiers who were bombed at the massacre. See, what happened was, so what happened was they said they had hunkered down right behind Greenwood, and they were holding the white folks off pretty good. Actually, they said they were winning until they dropped the bomb. And so they were, so that, and you know what they do over our cemeteries, that's exactly what they do in most places. They will build a garage, a parking lot, a ball field. That's what they do. And that's what they did here. So he made sure that, you know, and so all of those things, it could be that too. You know, all those things made them decide, we're going to discuss this and, you know, and the survivors need to be compensated. So, so I think, you know, it's probably a little bit of all of it. And and that's a wonderful thing. But I had no intentions of going down there because, you know, my thing is North Tulsa where the, most of the people live. But we didn't have any funds at all. And so what we were trying to do was assist the people who already had activities that they had planned in North Tulsa. And so that's what we were going to do. And so I went down yesterday and took some of my a paper called Wall Street to Tulsa North, and was passing them out. And what I noticed is that the food trucks, that were lined up. There were so many food trucks lined up, and most of them, from what I could see, were Caucasians making money off the holiday. And you see, they call it a festival in North Tulsa. We call it a pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm,
even
mm-hmm.
though the word festival had a different definition years ago as being of a place to retreat and reflect, and then it got to be like a fun, joyous thing. And that's what it is. And so most of the vendors, our people were doing a lot of jewelry and books and this and that, but those occasions were selling food because they know we like to eat. People like to eat.
Right.
They had
right,
stuff
sure.
there. So they were making money. You know, a lot of white folk made money off this. That's the
mm-hmm.
thing we have a problem with. Like, you all might just remember when Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King died, the serious people said, you will not make money off this. You will not celebrate. You will not have any kind of Martin Luther King Day sale." And businesses across the country did not for a while, but
mm-hmm,
now they're
mm-hmm.
beginning to do that because we have lost the value of in our people. So what I see is that it's the same old, same old. They make money off our events. Now, a lot of the events that happen are already events that Black people were doing anyway. Now,
mm-hmm.
like today, they had a car and bike show in North Tulsa, and they also had members of the Tuskegee Air Force there. They were on bikes. They had a yellow and black jackets, I think they were, and they were on bikes in North Tulsa. But then they took that parade downtown. They took their cars and the bikes downtown and drove through Greenwood. Also, the Black Panthers were there, and a
mm-hmm.
barrage of police officers, because they were there and they had rifles, and you know we know the story of that. So the police officers were all on the side streets, you know, like four or five deep in a car, you know, watching, you know, and all
mm-hmm.
they did was
mm-hmm.
march, you know, from around Martin Luther King Boulevard up to, you know, like from one end of Greenwood to the other end, which is about five or six blocks. But they went around the Martin Luther King Way and went up Pine and then went down, went to Pine and then went down to OSU. So it's just kind of interesting how they want to control, you know, what we do. And basically that's what we do. But there were a
right.
lot of people, some people even from Mississippi, the New Black Panther Party, some of them were from Mississippi. They had a group there. And Pamela Smith, who's been campaigning a long time for justice from being abused while she was on workforce with the system. So it was a bit of a sweet kind of experience, you know, in that folk were there and they just felt excited about being on Greenwood. It was just a moneymaker, in my opinion.
Wow.
As usual. And that's the unfortunate part that our people, you know, didn't understand. So I was not able to do almost anything of what the only thing I did was we had planned workshops because we wanted to educate our people.
Yes.
And so we premiered a documentary called The Four Isms. Not forgotten what they are, socialism, classism, sexism, and racism, I think they are. And by Dr. Parthenia Grant. So there is a school, a tech school called Tulsa Tech. So we previewed that at Tulsa Tech. And also I did a presentation on how to teach a preschooler to read, because we have to stop this prison pipeline. And as most of you all know, they build prisons based on how many young people cannot read by the time they reach third grade.
Right.
So
right.
They assume that by third grade, if you can't read, you're going to wind up in prison. And so that's
right.
How they build the prisons. And so we need to stop that pipeline because it more money is spent on a prisoner than it's spent on our children's education.
Yes.
And we need to, you know, and so we need to kind of tighten that up. And so I did a 37-minute presentation on how to teach a preschooler to read. Paul Miller, who really was the founder and implementer of Habitat for Humanity, which they stole from him, was supposed to come and deal with housing solutions, you know, the pros and cons of the little house, how to get money to buy a house without having to go to the bank. And so, but he got sick because he's so bogged down. You know, they said if you want something done, ask a busy person. So he got sick and was not able to come up to Houston. So we weren't able to do that workshop. But we
mm-hmm.
are going to, you know, we are putting these workshops online. One of them
okay.
is a gardening workshop and a husbandry workshop from a
mm-hmm.
sister, Rhonda Muhammad, in Oklahoma City. So
mm-hmm.
that's all we were able to do in North Tulsa because we just didn't have the funds to do anything. And I had no idea. You know, I thought we could get the money, but no, nothing ever came. So we didn't get anything
wow.
done. So, you know, but I did was able to pass out the papers and let them know some of the things that are going on. And
mm-hmm.
And tomorrow, we have the mayors here. We have the mayors of the diaspora here. They will be having breakfast tomorrow up in North Tulsa, and they will also be doing a century walk, but that'll be on Tuesday. And on Monday, they will also have an awards banquet honoring Brother Charles Rangel. And so, you know, there are a few things, you know, going on that's
wow.
happening also as well in North Tulsa. There's going to be a century walk from Greenwood all the way up to 56th Street, which just takes you straight through the North Tulsa area, right up into Turley. And so, and that is a walk 100, you know, for 100 years. It's almost like a second Trail of Tears, which we had planned
right.
one from Florida to Oklahoma, but again, without the funds, we couldn't even pay the chief of transportation, who was coming from out of New York, but he was going to start off with $2,000 as a payment. I mean, he had to have plane fare, hotel fare. I mean, we just didn't have it, so we couldn't
mm-hmm.
plan the walk from Florida to because we wanted to use the news media to build it up, just like people got on the trail. You know, Indians and indigenous people were put on the trail and the creeks
mm-hmm,
and, you know,
mm-hmm.
when they went through certain
right.
states, they were thrown on the trail. And the Buffalo soldiers really were the ones who were monitoring that trail. So they had to deliver
mm.
babies and bury bodies and everything else. So we've
mm.
always been there, you know, just like Memorial Day was started by black people, you know, because
yep.
there were so many. You know, black. So many call them Union soldiers that were just lying
mm-hmm.
lying on the ground,
mm-hmm.
not being buried, and the black people
mm-hmm.
begin to dig and, you know, put them in the ground. And but now Memorial Day, that too is a business. You know, lots
right.
and lots of flowers that we should be growing in our own backyards. So a downtown. There are a lot of activities. People don't understand the struggles that a lot of people, you know, had to go through to make some things happen, but a lot of the things that were already things that black people do this time of year anyway. It's just that the
mm-hmm,
city caught
mm-hmm.
solid. They did that, hyped it up, you know, put in a little more, some more stuff and made it look like, you know, they were doing something. But as we know, you know, the other folk, they're like big thieves and they can just take stuff and steal it and enhance
mm-hmm.
it and we go for it. So, but it was a day, you know, that some people had a lot of fun. I got, you know, calls from several people. Somebody wanted to go to the cemetery. And
mm-hmm.
I said, well, all the bodies in the Crown Cemetery, the Black Crown Hill on 66th Street, those people were properly buried. And if they got burned or whatever on Greenwood, they were properly buried. The bodies they're looking mm-hmm. for, I was told most of them, they put them, when they put them on those trucks, they just dumped them into the Arkansas River. And so one man had said that, came out, one man said that, well, he promised this man that he was assisting to do that. He promises, I don't tell anybody about this until I'm dead. And he kept his promise. Mm. So now that the man has died, now he's telling them that they dumped all these bodies into the Arkansas River.
Mm.
And so but they've dredged and they've gone into different white cemeteries and whatever looking for bodies, but they know the bodies are not. It's just another way of making money. You know, somebody comes in with a Geiger counter looking for some human remains in this location mm-hmm. and they don't find any. So
there's
many interesting ways that they make money off us. You know, it's North Tulsa. This is where the tax base is. This is where most of the small businesses are and some factories. And we have the largest tax base because almost everything we buy is, we don't know the tax, the way you can get exempt from some of these things. There's a sister down in Mississippi, her name is Ethel Kane Russell. She has some information about how to, and she's a member of Black Wall Street USA. As a matter of fact, I think she's director of the state for Black Wall Street USA in Mississippi. And she was supposed to do a workshop on you know, how to deal with the President Biden has come up with some new tax rules that will really benefit the small businessman, and she wanted to share that and some other information about taxes, but she couldn't, the hotel situation, she couldn't get that, because she couldn't get the right information on that. And she had a whole busload she was bringing up, but they couldn't make it because, you know, it was too much for a one man show. I just couldn't do it. But as far as the activities go, are still going on. The mayors will be having dinner up in North Tulsa at what they call the Dream Center, which is a youth center. I was told, now this is a good thing, I was told that this center was built, it's been there for a minute, but the program, all the youth programs that are in there are in there because the church that sponsors that, helps to sponsor that program, there in, I think, South Tulsa, and they didn't want, you know how some of us are very conscious about our children's education, and we were willing to take them, you know, several miles to get them to a decent school. So they were taking their children down south to their schools, but they didn't want them down there. So they built this one up, you know, so they could come and go to school in their own neighborhood, which we think is a great thing, you know, which all our children were in their own neighborhood, and the others would get out and go back to their neighborhood. But they know that Booker T. Washington, which they are also planning something there, Booker T. Washington was touted as the best school in the country last year, and this is about the second or third or fourth time that they have had that honor, and they're in North Tulsa. And so a lot of the children from George Washington Carver Middle School is the feeder school for Booker T. Washington High School. But most of the children who go there don't live in North Tulsa. They can't even get in the school. So it's that kind of thing that the people are waking up and they are going to begin to address. And I feel very confident in a lot of the things that have gone on. For example, when the massacre hit, a lot of people went to California. I'm getting away from all this, but a whole lot of people went back to North Carolina and Florida. And so because they knew the place, and I guess they were staying in touch with their relatives, and they knew that they could make it. I mean, they had a brick factory out here that was gone to bed. And the thing about it, with the jealousy, it came from the fact that the quality of the things that the black people did, like the bricks, like mm-hmm. the wooden furniture, it was mm-hmm. so awesome that they were getting orders and filling orders all the way from Europe. And there was a couple who had planes, and he was carrying stuff back and forth. So, I mean, they were really making a lot of progress. There were mm-hmm. white folks who would come to Greenwood to get money out of the bank because their own white bankers would loan them any money. So we were making a lot of progress, and our young people need to know that history so they can know from whence they came. So they can be better, you know, but that's not the picture that they want to paint. Last month, the governor just passed a law that it would be against the law to teach any kind of discrimination between one people and another. So you know what that meant. Somebody proposed this law, and he signed it. So that means in the history books, last year they were trying to get them to say that we came over here like as indentured servants and not as slaves. So they weren't allowed to teach that. The thing is that we can do so many wonderful things because of our heart and because of our creativity. You can't, certain things you just can't repeat. You can't duplicate the kindness in a person's heart. You just cannot. You can have your own degree of kindness, but you cannot do it. You can't take that from them. You might be able to take some skill that they may have. You may learn how to duplicate some of the things that we do. For example, Langston University has a nursing program that's recognized all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be duplicated because of the sincerity and the love and the melanin of the people. So what they decided to do, and I hope somebody has a lawsuit out by now, what they decided to do was build, when they took Langston out of the other building and put them in a building with no cafeteria, no auditorium, you know, a brand new building, no cafeteria, no auditorium. Imagine that in the 21st century. But anyway, they put them in this building, and now they're building up a school for allied sciences, and they're going to, they know they can't duplicate the program, so they have decided, okay, we will let you attend Langston University, and you will get your nursing degree, but it will read OSU, not Langston University. So these are the kinds of things that the Board of Regents will do to shadow the progress that our people have made. So we're very, you know, but we know that God is in control, and he said time looks low, and we have every confidence that we will, you know, we will overcome this. We will overcome this. So thank you for letting me share.
Oh, thank you, my sister. And before we open up the lines, in case there's any questions or comments for Sister Rahima, I just want to go back for one moment. You said something that struck me, and I'm like, oh, why are they doing that for? You said they're doing something for Charles Rangel?
They're honoring him.
Why?
Oh, I don't know why.
I didn't mean to say it like that. I was just.
I don't know why he was chosen. I know Mr. Miller was also chosen because, like I said, he was the creator of Heart Habitat for Humanity. That away from him, just like the lady who started MAD.
That makes
drunk
sense.
Driving. Right. So they're supposed to be honoring these people.
Right.
Mr. Miller can't make it because he wound up in the hospital. He's just overworked.
Right, right.
So he won't be able to make it, and we weren't able to get our housing solution workshops. But, you know, they say if you want something done, ask a busy person because the rest of them are not going to do anything.
Right.
And so that's what we have. So it's not controlled by us. This centennial was not controlled by us. So you know what to expect out of it. So that's all I want to share.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Thanks for letting me
thank
share.
You. I was just curious when I heard the name Charles Rangel. I mean, the other people I kind of connected those dots, but
I didn't quite get why. But anyway, we're going to go to, we still have Brother Mike in queue and also Brother Adrian. And family, if you have a question or a comment, please feel free to post it now. Certainly, at some point, we need to talk more about how we can be more supportive to the survivors in particular, the people there in Tulsa, Black folks that is, period. But definitely, you know, 106 and 7 years old, and all they want to do is give them a couple of dollars or some stuff. I mean, no. I mean, with if we charge Genocide 21 to the best of our ability, we're going to definitely raise that issue and make sure that our people, the mass of our people, know that we need to be standing up and supporting those survivors to a better, a greater extent. Let me go to Brother Adrian and also Brother Mike, see if they have a question or a comment for you, Sister Rahima. And again, family, if you have a question or comment, please press 1 now. Brother Mike, did you have some thoughts or something you wanted to share?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I thought it was interesting that you brought out an historical fact about Black Wall Street when she said that white people from various parts of the state of Oklahoma, other than North Tulsa, they would come to borrow money from the credit unions and the Black banks that were established in Black Wall Street. And I thank her for pointing that out, that even white people would come with their hands out asking for a loan to establish their business. That just shows you the strength and virility of what Black Wall Street represented at that time.
Right.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
Thank
Absolutely.
You, Brother Mike. Brother Adrian, did you have a question or a comment or a thought? Brother Adrian? Okay, I think he might be doing something
But I'll tell you, I was wondering why was there any talk of anyone honoring Charlie Rango, but... You know, once you said that it wasn't your call, then I could understand that because they could pull his name out of a hat and just honor him anywhere. But I would wonder why somebody would even honor him in Harlem, but, you know, which he represented for 44 years. But, you know, I was just wondering why would they honor him on a day of serious looking at Black business, looking at the history of oppression of Black people. Why would his name, because he's certainly no freedom fighter, so I was just wondering why he would be honored.
Well, maybe that's why he's being honored.
Yeah, I reckon so.
He's no freedom fighter.
Yeah, it struck me as soon as you said it. I was like, huh? What does he have to do with anything, you know, relevant to any of that? It just didn't make sense to me. So I thought maybe you knew, Sister Rahima. But, yeah, we kind of get the picture now. You know, again, there just seemed to be no connection to anything that we were, you know. Okay, moving right along. Wow.
Thank you.
So let me also just make something clear to folk, and that is from what I've been reading, there was a lot of money either raised or provided from the government or somewhere for this, you know, for this 100-year commemoration. And again, family, I want to point out that this went to the downtown area. Okay, this went to the location where it would not benefit the masses of Black folks. And we need to make that point clear because this is what they do. And in this kind of situation with that kind of atrocity happening, gosh, that should not be happening, you know, that all of this is being put in a location, once again, to benefit people other than, for the most part, people that, you know, really don't deserve what they're getting access to. And we have to point this out because this is a problem all over the country, but particularly in this particular situation, with what has happened there, this just should not be happening, and particularly with Black folks not saying something about it. That's the other thing. You know, we need to really put that out there, that this is just another – that's like – I don't know if you heard, Sister Rahima, that in 1985, of course, the bomb was dropped here in Philadelphia. Mm. Well, it's bad enough that they literally – the police – commissioner told the fire department, let it burn. Literally, after they saw it was like burning out of control, after they dropped the bomb and then they saw it was burning out of control, the fire department said to the police people, well, what do you want us to do? And the commissioner said, let the bunker burn, right? Which resulted in the whole thing. So my point is, if that wasn't bad enough, and just what you just said about how they took the bodies and then just threw them into the river, well, 36 years later, we find for Philadelphia that these people had remains from 1985 of even some of the children, and not tell the family that they had the remains, and then on top of that, took the remains and used them as part of their teaching classes.
Right.
Anthropology, right. And for instance, classes. So here we see once again the kind of mentality, the kind of behavior that we are seeing that has, you know, at least a history of 100 years. I mean, we know it's more than that, but we can prove 100 years of a shot. Yeah, we can prove this one clearly. Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
I had a son-in-law who was a garage, you know, restorer, or, you know, put in garage doors, and He went to one house. It was a contract. The person had a contract with Montgomery Wards, and he went to one house to put the garage door in, and the garage door was open. So he went toward the garage, and he went in, and he didn't want to. And he said the man came out and asked him what was he doing in there, and he told him that he came to replace the garage door. And he told him, and the man told him, well, you go back to Sears and tell them we don't want you to replace it. Send us somebody else. We don't want a Black man to replace it. And this man I was trying to get him to tell me what he saw, but there were things in jars, pickled in jars, that he didn't want to share with me what. But we know they were body parts. They used to collect, you know, cut off men's private parts and tickle them and everything. They, you know, it was like a conversation piece. So, but my son-in-law wouldn't tell me, you know, what he saw, but he said they had some things in that garage that was just like incredible, you know. So they're a weird bunch, but and so we have a lot, and just like the commission, everybody thought the commission. They put one Black guy out there, and he's supposed to be it in charge. He was the person. He, you know, it was it. No, but then we had to investigate and found out that they had a whole board over him. You know, in the beginning. So that's what they do. They'll stick one of us out there to make it look authentic.
Sure.
And then go off and do what they want to do. But
that reminds me. Sister Rahima, wait, hold that thought for 1 minute. That reminds me, because this has really been bothering me. And family, please, if you have a thought on this, I would love to hear it, and it's this. When I found that the mural, that there's supposed to be this mural that was unveiled earlier this week, right, as a part of the commemoration, and then when I saw the interview with the artist, I was like, wait a minute, I'm confused. First of all, the artist had never been to Tulsa until he did the mural, number one. Didn't even know anything about Tulsa until he was contacted to be asked to do the mural, this commemorative mural. Mm-hmm. Had never even heard of Tulsa, had no information, no history, and didn't begin to learn anything about it until he agreed to do the mural. Okay, so those are 2 points, y'all. I want y'all to take note of what I'm going to say. So after I began to listen and look further, because they actually did this interview and it was visual, it was online, then I looked again and there was this white man who was talking about, you know, he himself was shocked that he was the one selected to do this mural to commemorate the 100 year of, and I'm like, wait a minute, yeah, let's go back for a minute. One, he wasn't from that area at all, had never been there before, knew absolutely nothing about Tulsa. I'm confused. Wait a minute. We don't have black artists? I mean, so I'm like, yo, what? Are y'all serious? So then when the dude, the person even said, well, how did you find out about this? And he said, well, we were contacted by the commission, and then he named the person, named Dr. Somebody. I wrote it down. I have my notes with me right now. But, wrote, you know, I'm like, and this was a female Negro. I mean, a Negro, anyway, this was a female black person. Oh, I'm sorry. So,
go ahead.
So, Sister Rahima, help me, please. And before you answer, I just want to remind everyone, I had a similar response of the Dr. Martin Luther King statue that they did in Washington, D.C. that kind of looked Asian. Yeah. And I wonder, why did he look so Asian? Of course, it made sense when you found out, because it wasn't Asian, they did the sculpture. Anyway, Sister Rahima, help us with, I mean, I'm confused.
Well, the bottom line is, once they destroyed Greenwood, their motto was, never let them rise again. And so when I came here almost 20 years ago, anything we tried to do, for example, a few years after that, North Tulsa was declared as a food desert. And so the federal government sent millions of dollars down to assuage the situation. When the man died, he was later found out he was homosexual and he had AIDS. When he died about 7 or 8 years later, one of the ladies in the ARP program, she went to the hospital and told him that he had done us wrong, because we had a lady here who had lived here for years. I think her name was Newsom. She and her husband was a police officer, and she was here, and she had a wealth of information that she would go to these meetings and share that information. And when that man died and got off that program and died, he was supposed to be putting in he was supposed to be putting in just fresh food in a like a church. Yeah, what do you call them? Somebody help me out here. What do you call them?
Farmer's market
on Saturday, like a what?
Like a farmer's market.
A farmer's market. He was supposed to come in and put a farmer's market in North Tulsa. The only thing we got in North Tulsa, I did get them to put a fence around a school in Turley on the side where the black people live, for the children to build a garden, because we were trying to teach the children to feed themselves, because, you know, a lot of mothers don't have time to feed these children because they got to get out and work. And so we're trying to teach the children to grow their own food and everything. So we did get a fence out of them. And when somebody needed their yard dug up to, you know, plowed to plant, they'd go somewhere and borrow somebody's plow and get it done. But a couple of new markets came out of that. Farmers markets came out of that on other sides of the county, and the ones that were there got an enhancement. It's amazing what they got out of that money, but North Tulsa got nothing progressive.
Nothing. And so their motto has always been, never let them rise again. Now I find out that they have a new motto that's, I guess, supposed to be a little softer, and that is, and I got this from a Caucasian woman. She didn't know what she was telling me, but she said the new motto is, you can't make it out of North Tulsa unless you are a ball player. So they put a $7 million gym in a so-called magnet school that has absolutely nothing but a bunch of boys that are in the, and put into a special education program so that they can make money off that and send it back to other parts of the city. Now, I also read that 23% of the children in the system are white. The rest are people of color. So they are really anxious about this population change. So what we have is a group of insecure people, like today when the Black Panther Party was here. I think there were more police there than there were Black Panthers. You know, they were four or five deep in one car. You know. So that's basically what it is. They fear our rise. We're going to rise anyway, but they fear that rise.
It's already gained,
and they're afraid of it, and they're doing everything they can to hold us back. And not only that, they're getting back into our blood. I even read somewhere that even the Asians are beginning to marry Black women because they want their seed to continue. And so
they can keep
doing the color thing. I mean, look at the Indians. With the indigenous people, what color are they? It shows you the difference has been all over the world. This Miss Newsom, who lived on 66th Street, she said when she first moved there, there was a mission school across the street that was full of nothing but young girls. And those girls were over there crying every day, being sexually abused. Every day. They were over there crying. So that's the kind of mentality that, you know, we've been living with, and, you know, and what can you do? I mean, what can you do about it but be away from them? That's why we were just trying to stay up in North Tulsa by ourselves, but, you know, it's hard to do when you don't have any money. Like they say, a prayer moves heaven, but money moves the earth, so.
We have funds.
Yeah. And I wasn't able to do anything simply because I didn't have any funds. God is good. And I was able to see, you know, and there was so much division and so much fighting and bickering over this money because they dispensed $30,000 and had $70,000 left. And the Black folks said, well, where's the other $70,000? What are you going to do with that? And they didn't quite have a straight answer about it. But so now that the Black folks, I guess, are fussing more and more about where's the money, you know, where's the rest, where's the $70,000?
Yeah.
Now they're beginning to, you know, just think about it. We're not going through this with these people another year.
this is really something. I mean, but again, it really gives a good example. And by the way, the theme supposedly for what was going to happen either tomorrow or whatever day is remember and rise. But yet, Sister Rahima just said that one of their focuses was they should never rise again. And
that was
actually part of the theme, remember and rise. Wow. This is really, really something.
It reminds me of the time in Baltimore when there was supposed to be a war against drugs, and in the penitentiary, because I was teaching in the penitentiary, Maryland State Penitentiary at the time, some of the officers would come in and officials would come in with a big button, you know, about the drugs, and they were the main ones bringing them in. But they were, you know, they were using the motto, whatever the motto was at that time, they were using it on the button, and they were the ones bringing the drugs into the penitentiary. So you really can't pay attention to everything that you every mantra. Wow. They remember rise. You know who's rising? They see what they did. They on Greenwood, on the north side of Greenwood, which is where the cultural center is and everything. That they're losing those properties. They're raising the rental so high that the black people can't afford to stay in there.
Sure.
They
sure.
Moving out and white.
Oh, they're doing that all over the country.
But
yeah.
On the other side of the Greenwood, they told this brother. It's a long story, but they told this brother that they were going to build him an art gallery over there. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so they were excited about it and everything. But what they're also building, he may have a space in a building that's like 3 or 4 feet high with a parking lot
mm-hmm.
and all that over there.
Mm-hmm.
So they you know, they will use you to get certain things, and then they take it and they run with it and come up with something.
Right,
else.
Sure.
Yeah,
because a lot of stuff, yeah, they want to make sure that they can show some inclusiveness. And a lot of that stuff, but the other
right.
thing I want to focus on too, just so people who might not know, is that the survivors did, of course, have legal representation, and I don't know if Sister
mm-hmm.
Rahima is at liberty to talk about who they are or what they are really about, but what was said is that initially there was $100,000. That was agreed upon or that was supposedly, yeah, they said it was agreed, you know, they agreed upon $100,000 each of the survivors. I mean, first of all, that's just such a slap in the face. But then it said that later, of course, the survivors are saying that they should get reparations, which they certainly should. And that was, of course, to the tune of $2 million, which I thought was still low, but okay. So that supposedly is where things begin to go further awry. With some of what's going on, and it seems like there seems like the community though, or there's a part of the community that is in fact supportive of making certain that the survivors do get reparations. So what can you shed any light on that, Sister Rahima?
I can't shed any light on that. I'm just letting Esquire DeMario Solomon Simmons deal with that. Because I've been doing so much, I haven't been able to concentrate on it. But the interesting thing is I was talking to someone about 3 o'clock this morning, because she's been sick and I called her up, and she was saying, what is a 100-and-some-year-old person going to do with $100,000? What are they going to do with it? They don't need it.
Mm.
I said,
oh, my God.
If they were only making $20,000 a year, for 50 years, how much money is that if they were only making 25? They weren't even allowed to do that. So, I mean, our mindset has to change. It's like
yeah,
a person on drugs. You can do everything you want
yeah,
to do. Their mind
crazy.
Doesn't change. You can forget.
Right,
it.
That's
it
right. To even ask that that's question funny. To me is just, first of all, it's not only ludicrous, it's disrespectful. And here's
done.
The thing, that these people, these survivors don't have descendants. They don't have relatives. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, usually when you get to a certain age, you start thinking about what it is you want to make certain that
mm-hmm.
those who are a part of your family, what you're able to, you know, help them to do
right.
once you're gone. I mean, that's what a lot of people
mm-hmm.
do think about. So for someone to not even think or take into
mm-hmm.
consideration that they earn the right to be able to make sure
mm-hmm.
that their descendants are okay. I mean, that's what other people do. Oh, that's just ridiculous.
When I came on the line, weren't they just talking about the mayor and how this thing has been passed down from what this
yes.
mayorship has been passed down from one family to another?
Yep.
I mean,
so
from the same family, in the same family?
Right.
Please.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of folks do. I mean, because that's a part of how you keep your legacy and the inheritances and all of that. That's a part of it. So for someone black to not even think you know, minimally about what should be happening for their own people. Like you said, I mean, the mentality, and that's something that we're going to talk about more in the future, and that is, you know, how are we going to get rid of these Willie Lynch chips? We got to talk more about that. How are we going to either reduce or lessen or just get rid of the Willie Lynch chip, the Willie Lynch syndromes, or whatever you want to call them? Because that is too abundant in our communities nationwide. We got these folks from walking around with these chips. All right, my sister. Well, we're going to close this session out. Oh, yeah, and you are as well. And, you know, I wish we were able to get down there to meet with you, but it's coming, that's for sure. This just wasn't the best time to do it. But we're going to do it. We're going to do it, you know, without all the fanfare and all of that. We're going to do it because we're supposed to. And that's what we're going to make sure it happens in the very near future. But I'm going to go back to Brother Mike real quick and get some closing comments from him. And then we'll close out with you, Sister Rahima, with you letting people know again how they can stay in touch with you and get access to the paper that you have. And also, we're looking forward to building with you. By the way, family, and I didn't tell Sister Rahima this yet, but we're working on next year our first Black Women's National Political Convention. We're in the makings of it now. It will take place in Las Vegas. We finally found a team in Vegas who's going to help us do that. So, Sister Rahima, we definitely plan to come get you. And we want to talk to our sisters. Oh yeah, we're getting ready because we want to look at investment. We want to look at how can we begin to invest in us. In fact, we have a unit that we're going to be putting out later on this year. We have a new unit that we're placing for the Million Women March Universal Movement, and one of the slogans is "Do business with the real USA." And we're talking about the United Sisters of Africa, the USA, United Sisters of Africa, okay? So we got a whole new thing coming up for these people, how we as women are going to pull our pennies together, our dollars together, and invest in property, invest in, you know, various things that we know is lucrative and is necessary. So again, family, we'll be telling you more about that in the very near future, but we're working on it, our first national Black Women's Political Convention, because we're bringing forward the Million Woman Party. We told you we were going to do it. Well, it's coming.
All right.
So, Sister Rahima, you'll be getting more information about that. But I'm going to go to Brother Mike real quick and get his closing comments. And he can tell us about this latest edition of Community Cop. Brother Mike, you there?
Yes. You can check out any Community Cop. Just go to YouTube and put in Community Cop, and it'll pop up. Just say that the level of confusion that we have in our community by our historical enemies, they are engaging in revisionist history as we speak. And you have a situation where the guy who called in tonight, John or Thomas, whatever founding father he named himself after, he was trying to act like all of this is so confusing, and what should we do? How can we separate ourselves? Because he don't want to see us when he walks out his door. So he's just saying, given the situation, how can we remove ourselves from the process when, in fact, it's his process that got us in the condition that we're in? So he acts like as if we can wave a magic wand and somehow eradicate the situation, where it's actually really a white problem. They're the ones who've created this situation. But we, being the moral leaders of this planet, we're trying to, you know, think our way through this and try to find a reasonable way to extricate ourselves from this situation. But in any event, we have dealt with Tulsa, Oklahoma's, our entire sojourn here in America. It's happened time and time again when we pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps. So of course, we have the strength. We have what it takes. We have a God-given right to exist and to prosper. So we're going to see ourselves through this. We're going to see ourselves through what Trump and his people are doing right now, removing all these this historical data and replacing it with some sanitized form of history. So we just got to keep going to endeavor to persevere. So, you know, whether it's the Mackey Group, who I love, who are now establishing, you know, every other week a lecture, and what's being done all over the country, and whether whatever black organizations to organize people to establish some type of educational system so that we would have our truth, so we don't allow supremacists like the one we experienced tonight trying to confuse us, you know. But he was just, he's not the intelligentsia among white supremacists, so he don't even know how to even fake it. So you was able to undress him, and he had to come out with his stuff, you know. He had to come out of his bag, which he didn't really want to do. He wanted to act like he was a friend of black people. But, you know, it's just that dynamic we go up against every so often, somebody who come and saying, well, what, I don't know what's going on. I don't have an opinion. You know, Malcolm always said, you know, when you don't know, they will give you the information. But when you do know, they act like that information don't exist. So, you know, if you don't know what so-called color Christ was, then they'll tell you he's white. But if you say he's black, then they'll say, well, race shouldn't matter. So they ready on both sides of the coin, wherever you at. Their goal is just to confuse you. So he was trying to confuse us today. And just so for all of us out there, whether we have critical information or you have what your grandparents taught you, you just fight. You fight based on that, you know. And so we'll all be okay. And so we just got to just get better at whatever we're doing, get better and educate ourselves and be ready for war. War is going to be, the battlefield is wherever you are. And that's just the bottom line. So with that, I'll just say we just got to encourage each other and every walk of life just to be better.
I say. Thank you, Brother Maya. Okay, we're going to get our closing comments from Sister Rahima. Before we do, I want to remind everyone, of course, on Thursdays, every Thursday, you can catch Thorough Black Pride with Sister Keisha, Brother Tad, Brother Ashe. And, of course, they're on YouTube. So just go to Thorough Black Pride on YouTube. You can see the latest edition. And also you can catch any of the recent editions as well, but you can catch them live every Thursday at 8 o'clock. Also, Brother Lee Robinson is Africa on the Move on Sundays from 7 to 9 p.m. And, of course, you know, we keep it real and live every week here on New Day. So we're going to go back to Sister Rahima, get her closing comments and how we can stay in touch with her. Sister Rahima, you got it.
Well, thank you, Empress Chi. I would just like to close by thanking the One Most High, the Great I Am, God, for Allah, for the kindness He has provided us to be able to come together and reason together at this time. And I would ask for support. We are planning on doing better in North Tulsa. Another young sister has come on board to assist us. She's all gung ho, and I'm looking forward to working with her. I just met her actually yesterday when she called me while we were at the workshop. So we're looking forward to being able to become exposed and having more people support us in our endeavor to make a difference for the people. The beautiful thing that I found out about this whole thing is that North Tulsa is very organized. They're just lying back, waiting,
They're not bickering, you know, they're not bickering and fighting and fussing against each other. They are trying to be in support of each other. And I am just so surprised after almost 20 years of being here to find this community that's in support of what each one is trying to do that is of good. So I ask that you support us. You may call us. You may, our PO box is 48593, Tulsa, Oklahoma. 74148. Our address is 44417 North Peoria, Tulsa, Oklahoma 74106, and we look forward to you visiting with us or sending us some support or words of kindness or encouragement so that we can make a difference. We got off to a bad start this year because we were supporting people who left us and went downtown where the money was. And they got kicked out from the money. But we hope that next year, you know, we'll stay focused on what we're supposed to be doing in North Tulsa. And we pray that you will bless us with some support. So thank you for very much for letting me share. And again, the P.O. Box is 48593. My name is Rahima Rahim, R-A-H-E-E-M, P.O. Box 48593, Tulsa, Oklahoma. 74148. Thanks for letting me share. And may God continue to bless each and every one of you on this line. Good night.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Sister Rahima. And we want to remind everyone to please join us on Friday, starting on Friday, June 4th, as we salute the great Mother Callie House, Saint Callie House, our June virtual conference for the Reparatory Justice Now Forum will take place starting on June the 4th through Sunday, which will be June the 6th. And you can get the link if you email us. If you want to get the link, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. If you want to call in, you can use the call-in method by dialing 312-626-6799. Again, 312-626-6799 or 646-558-8656. Again, 646-558-8656. If you're not on our e-list and you would like to get information on a regular basis, just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com and we'll certainly put you on our e-blast and or text blast kind of listing. All right, family, we're going to close this session out, and we certainly appreciate you tuning in. Remember, we have to now free all of our political prisoners. That is a part of our first phase of our Reparatory Justice Program. And remember, keep that date, get ready, and support in whatever way possible. You can support us by using your Cash App. Send it to any donation is wonderful. We appreciate our Cash App ID is $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. Or if you use PayPal, you can PayPal us at nbhrproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com. Remember that date, Saturday, September the 4th, we will be at the United Nations to begin to show the world that some black folks here in the U.S. are indeed serious, are in fact ready to be organized, and yes, we charge Genocide 21. Sister Rahima, thank you again. And I look forward to building with you in the future. We will have some real victories. Best believe it. So thank you again.
Yes.
All right, family. Absolutely. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there will never be any real peace until there's truly Ma'atic justice. Because this is what we say, Sister Rahima, if there's no justice, there's no what?
No peace.
No peace. You got that right. Ashe, ashe, ashe. Thank you, family. Yes, and we
thank
will
you.
See you in the field next time. Peace to you all.
God willing, Trish. Peace. Peace and blessings.